though my theories would probably be laughable to anyone with a better knowledge of biology, I wondered if the skull borers might get smarter depending on what they ate. Would the prions and neurons of their meals accrete somehow and improve their thinking? If such a thing were possible, maybe eating the double brain of a Saurian would explain how their tactics adapted and improved. Because they had been pursuing a tactical strategy by going after Nakari's hands. And come to think of it, when they attacked my face, the way that one of them landed on top of the other was clever too. I couldn't get to the one on the bottom using the stun sticks, and they hadn't seen the blasters get used yet, so they wouldn't have been able to account for that. But that possibility raised other questions. The one that landed on the other's back would have necessarily been punctured by the first one's spines. So if that had been planned, it had been a planned sacrifice. Could they even see each other while camouflaged? Maybe that 1-2 business had been a complete accident. The two that attacked Nakari had obviously coordinated their attack, though, which made me wonder how they communicated. We had heard no vocalizations from them until we caused them pain. The simplest explanation, and far more likely than the idea that they could get smarter by eating brains, was that the skull borers were at least semi-sentient, maybe even sentient to begin with. But between them killing the first two collection crews, and me and Nakari killing them back, we had never had time to puzzle out their status. All of my questions were better answered by Kellen Biolabs, and I was more than ready to drop the entire mess into their lap. I tapped the code into the datapad that would unlock the hatch to the living quarters. No bodies awaited me in the hallway, but I had to step over the fallen body of the human female outside the door to enter it. All the quarters were closed, and I punched in the override for each one, finding the first two on either side empty, albeit with signs of recent occupation. Papers on desks, half-empty cups of caff, tossed linens, and a carelessly discarded pair of underwear in one case. I found the sixth and final member of the Harvester's crew behind the third hatch on the left. He was a human male, curled up on his bunk, most likely dead, his lips cracked and dry, and his skin gone pale. Though his skull was still intact, he hadn't responded to Nakari's shipwide calls when he had the requisite equipment to do so. I checked. The console by the door still worked. Perhaps he had locked himself in here once he realized the skull borers were loose on the ship and knew that he couldn't venture outside the room without his armor. Several empty water bulbs lay strewn about the floor, but I saw no food packets. Who knew the last time he'd had a drink or something to eat? He'd chosen to die of thirst rather than have his brain sucked up a feeding tube. An understandable decision. I saw an old-fashioned handwritten diary open on his desk, which would no doubt illuminate his last days. Just to make sure, I knelt beside him and leaned forward until my visor was right next to his open mouth and nose. After a couple of seconds, the glass unmistakably fogged. He still breathed. He had to be near death, though. I had to get him to the medical bay immediately. Turning off the stun stick in my left hand, I placed it on his desk and then tried to prod him awake with a few finger jabs. He didn't respond. So I turned off the other stun stick and put it down, threw him awkwardly over my left shoulder, then grabbed a stun stick in my right hand before returning to the medical bay. "Nakari, I found someone," I said as I entered. A pair of robot arms suspended from the ceiling was wrapping up her left hand in a thick protective shroud of bandages.
"Still alive?" she asked.
"Yeah, but he's in bad shape."
"Well, it's finished with me anyway," she said,
her words languorous and mellow. The medication must have kicked in. She waved at the medical apparatus hanging above her with her damaged hand.
"It can do the surgery required for something like this. These things are meant to keep you alive, and mending tendons isn't on their list of vital services."
She rose from the examination bed to make room, and I slid the man onto it.
"Know him too?"
I asked, once she could see his face.
"No,"
she shook her head.
But I'm sure my father will be glad to get him back.
Mind looking after him? I'd like to clear the rest of the ship.
Absolutely. You do that,
she replied, and plopped herself into a chair resting against the wall. She didn't look entirely lucid, so I programmed the autodock to begin its work on the man before I left him. The remaining cabins were empty, and the bridge was pristine. I wasn't attacked at any point, so I thumbed the shipwide comm and said,
Nakari, the ship is clear, at least without scanning. I will start up the engines and run pre-flight, then come back through with a scanner to make doubly sure.
She acknowledged, and then the work began. The Harvester was okay on fuel, and all systems were nominal, except for the profound lack of a crew at the moment. I dragged all the victims into the holding area between the galley and the bathroom, where their unused armor was, then returned briefly to the Desert Jewel to fetch a small lifeform scanner to scan the Harvester thoroughly. It was truly clear, so I asked Nakari what she'd like to do next.
How are we getting this ship out of here?
Link it to the Desert Jewel's nav, and you fly us all back to Pasha. I'll stay on board in case this guy wakes up and try to clean up some of this mess.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. We better get paid really well for this.